Hello and welcome to the Former Scout podcast. Our guest this week has won not one, but two titles in 2021 and is one of the nominees of the Aston Martin Autosport BRDC Award. Ollie Biermann won both the German and Italian Formula 4 championships in 2021 and Roger Gascoigne caught up with him recently. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to the Former Scout podcast. My name's Roger Gascoigne and my guest today is a young British driver who set the junior categories in Europe alight in 2021. He's a double Formula 4 champion, winning arguably the two strongest Formula 4 championships, the Italian and the German, an achievement which nobody has managed before. He's been selected to join the Ferrari Driver Academy. He made his FIA Formula 3 test debut with Prema in Valencia recently, reached the final of the prestigious Autosport Aston Martin BRDC Awards, and if that wasn't enough, also sailed through his GCSEs at school this year. I'm talking, of course, about Ollie Biermann. Ollie, welcome to the Formula Scout podcast.
Hi, everyone. Looking forward to a chat today.
Great. Let's dive straight in to the last season. You've had a little bit of time now to let your achievements sink in since wrapping up the two championships. Do you still kind of need to pinch yourself to make it clear that it wasn't a dream?
No, to be honest, it was. Obviously, I've had some time now to kind of realize and I'm past the stage of, you know, celebration. I'm now focusing on the future. But yeah, during the week or so afterwards, I was super happy and really ecstatic. But now it's kind of, you know, I always had the goal at the start of the season to win at least one championship. So it was never like a crazy, I wasn't so surprised when I found myself in the lead at the halfway point of the championship. And yeah, when I got to the end, it wasn't a surprise. It was more, you know, I'd been there since basically the first round. So it was just conservation, really.
What do you think now, sort of looking back, where do you see the key to your successes? Where do you think you have the edge?
I think definitely at the start of the year, I had really strong qualifying performances. I had a lot of pole positions for the first half of the season. And then I think the second half of the season, it was a bit more difficult for us, but we still maximized a lot of things. I felt I was particularly strong in racecraft. Especially like in Monza, I had a super good weekend where I definitely didn't have a lot of top speed compared to some other cars for a number of reasons. But I still managed to win a few races at a track like Monza. It's one where you won a lot of top speed and we didn't have it and still managed to extract the results. And I think for that reason, I was just, you know, a lot of factors went against us in the second half of the season. And it was more about conserving than building up a lead, especially in the German championship. But I think I was always there when I had to be, and I didn't make any stupid mistakes for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, that run you had from sort of June to mid-September, I think, on track, you won, I think, 14 races straight, something like that, across the two championships, which, yeah. as you said, really, particularly where how the calendars were, really put you in a very strong points lead in both countries. You know, at any point did you think, well, this is easy? You know, that to be so dominant over, you know, six meetings through that middle part of the season.
Yeah, to be honest, like, we always knew that the first half of the season would be favoring us because we went to tracks that have historically been strong for our car. I mean our team has always been strong in Red Bull Ring, always strong in Zandvoort. We also Misano and Imola and tracks like that, Vallelunga as well. It's just been historically strong tracks for us, and we knew that the second half of the season would always be a bit more difficult, especially in Germany. You know, two Hockenheim events and Sachsenring, those are typically tracks where VAR struggles. And yeah, we also didn't manage to test in Mugello or Monza. as well as Hockenheim and Sachsenring. So yeah, we always knew the second half of the season would be a bit more difficult. So despite the first half going really well, we were always looking at the second half thinking, oh, it might get a bit tough. You know, let's keep pushing and do what we can. But yeah, it was, in the end, it was okay.
So when you were looking at the calendar, it was really, you know, together with the team saying, well, we need to build up as many points as possible in that first half on tracks that obviously Van Amersfoort have been strong at, and then see how we take it from there. Was that kind of the approach?
Yeah, especially in Germany, because the second half of the season, you know, the first two races in Red Bull Ring and Zandvoort, they were really favouring us. We're normally strong at them tracks, and we were. I won both the non-reverse grid races there. And then, yeah, we got to Hockenheim, and the other teams are tested there, and we didn't manage to, because we were the only team that committed to a full double campaign. So yeah, we didn't get to test at Hockenheim. We didn't get to test at Sachsenring. We didn't get to test at Mugello or Monza, or Nürburgring. So I think, to be honest, like, if we had tested at the tracks, then we would have been at less of a disadvantage. But we were always starting on the back foot compared to other teams. And we ended up somewhere in the window where we wanted to be. But, you know, with just two practice sessions, there's not really much you can try. And yeah, we were always kind of guessing what to do in qualifying. Whereas in the first half of the season, we knew exactly where we wanted to be going into qualifying. And I had every confidence that it would go right. Whereas in the second half, it was kind of like praying that this setup change we made would sort out a balance issue that we had in the three practices. So yeah, it was quite tough the second half.
And was there an element of playing it conservative and looking for the points finish when you obviously had such a big lead, you know, coming into those races? You just talked about where you struggled a bit more and you hadn't tested. Obviously, the lack of testing played a part, but were you also in your own driving, taking a more conservative approach or just to get the points?
To be honest, from the start of the season, I didn't really change a lot my mindset or how I drove the car, you know, racing other people. I was always trying to balance risk and reward quite well. I didn't have any, you know, race ending contacts that were in my control where I, you know, didn't leave a guy enough space to and took myself out of the race and stuff like that. So I was always trying to balance risk and reward as best as I could. And that was something that I focused a lot with my engineer on, because I think if you want to win a championship, then you always have to be scoring points. It's not like, you know, second half of the season when you start to change the mindset. I think if you start with the mindset of, you know, always finishing in the points, not getting taken out or making stupid errors, then it's going to be better. So that was really what we started on, because we knew from the preseason testing that we had a really strong package, and it was just a case of always finishing up there. And I think that was something that we did really well and was quite a key to winning the championships.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you were always at the front in both, and you know, particularly in the Italian, where there were 35 cars at a time. Yeah. Once you're in the midfield, then there's quite a lot happening away from the start of the front of the field. I mean, one thing I noticed, I'm not sure whether it was something you particularly worked on, you struggled a little bit in Ricard with the starts. But then for the rest of the season, you had some storming getaways and off the line and the first lap. I mean, particularly, whether starting at the front or, you know, when you were down the field slightly, either in the reverse grids in Germany or where qualifying hadn't gone quite so well, but on, you know, a number of occasions you'd made up most of those places, sometimes by the first corner and certainly on the first lap. Were the starts something that you, or the first lap pace, something you worked on? Was it, you know, something with cold tyres where you felt you had an extra advantage?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, the Paul Ricard and also last season in F4, that was something that wasn't really what I would have liked. I was having quite, you know, average starts, and I think especially in F4, there's a lot of time to be had in making a good start. And basically from Paul Ricard onwards, I never made a bad start. I was always going up on the first laps. And yeah, my first laps were a particular strength. I was always, you know, quite close to the limit very early on, which played into my hands very well, especially in the colder events. So like Monza, when we had low grip, I was always up there. And yeah, Nürburgring as well. My start in race three, I was basically, I started eighth because I won race two. And I think by the first braking zone, I was up to third or fourth or something. Like I'd already overtaken Chamnitz. So it was quite a strength of ours. And yeah, we worked a bit on the starts in testing, but I don't think it was really enough. And, you know, but when I got to Paul Ricard for the first round, I was sitting on the grid a bit nervous. And all I could think about was not stalling the car. And then I stalled it. So yeah, after that, I was a lot more confident because we practiced in free practice. We just did starts and stuff like that. So it was a bit more second nature. And yeah, for that reason, I was, from Misano onwards, my starts were impeccable, I think.
Yeah, so no, I certainly, looking back at the season, or the two seasons in the two championships, and then the pace from the grid and as you said, in the Nürburgring, for example, making up ground so quickly, particularly where you've got the reverse grid races, I think was a key factor in scoring those points to get to the titles. I mean, you mentioned Monza. I mean, that was a very special performance over the weekend. Also, having kind of flown in overnight from Silverstone and missing the tests the test day at the event and prior to that, which the others had been through. That must have been quite a kind of special feeling, taking three wins, having to pass people. I mean, it wasn't that you sat on pole and drove away. So strong racecraft and in tricky conditions, wet, dry, intermediate, and then to end up standing on the podium at just fairly iconic location at Monza, that must have been a pretty special event.
Yeah, Monza was really a highlight of the whole season. Obviously, I didn't test there the day before, everyone had. So I just rocked up on the Friday, did the free practices and straight into quali. And we were already quite on the pace. Just, you know, in Monza qualifying is all about finding the perfect slipstream. And I managed to do a good lap in Q1. I think I put it on the front row, but then I started like P7, P8 for races two and three. So I know I had a good chance for race one. And it was still super difficult because the guy on the front row just like, I think he had 5 horsepower more than everyone else. So that was quite difficult. But yeah, races two and three, I didn't really have any expectations for. I know that the other guys did a test day there when it was wet a couple months beforehand. So I was a bit like, okay, this is going to be difficult because Monza is quite an old track surface. You know, you really have to have the lines right because it's super important to get the lines right there. Yeah, I think in race one, I found myself, sorry, race two, I started seventh, I think, and I was already third by the end of the first lap. And then race three, I was leading by the end of the first lap from PA. And that was also a really good start. So yeah, I think in that weekend, I was just able to take more risks because, you know, I already had the championship wrapped up. I could kind of have fun with it. And the other guys, they were like Montoya and Smal, they were still going for P3, I think, in the championship. And, you know, the others, they had kind of pressure on their shoulders, where for me, it was lifted off. And I also wanted to be with the best confidence going into the last round of the German championship at Nürburgring. So that was the best way to do it, really, by winning all three races in Monza. And also to stand on the podium was pretty cool, three times as well. It's a really nice atmosphere.
So you really, you did feel under less pressure having wrapped up the championship already the round before at Mugello, you could go out and kind of enjoy it a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't really, the pressure didn't change because, you know, when you sat on the grid and the lights come on, it's always the same feeling. But it's more the fact that I could take a few more risks with overtakes that I wouldn't necessarily do if I was still fighting for a championship because, you know, that weekend, if I went around the outside of someone and they pushed me off, it wasn't the end of the world. It was, I, it's, I could have done it, and it wouldn't have mattered if they took me out. So I was able to just go for things that I wouldn't have done earlier in the season. And the only other time I've been able to do it this season was in British F3. The three rounds I did there, I was able to, especially the one at Silverstone, you know, the other guys, they were right in the thick of a championship fight, and I was just going for it with no, you know, no, it didn't matter if I crashed, it did if they crashed. So I was going for it, and they were being really conservative, and it's good fun when it's like that.
Yeah, definitely. And so you mentioned then coming into the last German round the week after at the Nürburgring. Race one didn't really go perfectly. I think you made a small mistake and ended up having to pit and coming out half a lap or so behind the rest of the field. Were the moments there where you thought, I've blown it, this is now going to be, because the gap wasn't so big to Tramnitz before going into the Nürburgring.
Yeah. I think it was just over 25 points. So yeah, I knew I had to kind of just, even if I didn't win, I just had to finish second to him. And I was on the inside of him into T1, and I locked up on the white line. So I overshot slightly, and he got the switch back and was around my outside in T2. And then I just had a snap in the middle of T2 and made contact with him. And broke my front wing, which was one of the few, you know, costly errors of the season. I managed to make it back to the pits, and, you know, was quite a long way down. And at that point, I was just, you know, I think I did the fastest lap after I exited the pits, but also I was trying not to be too hard on the tyres. You know, I didn't really know if I would be able to benefit from a safety car or not. So I was also trying to save the tyres for the next two races, not knowing that race two would be wet. But that's a different story. I was quite lucky to have the safety car. And then, from there, I made it to the points quite fast. I think I was in 15th or something. And then I was already up to P10 after one or two laps. And then I was quite confident that I had good pace and I could go through a bit more. And I think I ended up P5 or something like that, which was, you know, quite good, all things considered. But with the pace I had, I could easily have, if I just was a bit more conservative and just let Tramnitz have the position in turn two, I think I had a lot more pace than him, and I could have potentially, you know, saved it for another lap and overtaken him at a later stage. But hindsight's 20/20.
Did either of the championships give you more pleasure than the other, or were they, in terms of obviously winning them, or were they equal? I mean, quite different in terms of number of cars. You know, at times, the German was 9 cars, and the Italian, as I said before, was sort of 35.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, us racing were really focused on the German. Testing there as well.
Yeah, that's why I think that the German championship was more rewarding to win it, because especially in the second half of the season, as I said, we didn't get to go to Sachsenring, which was huge. Sachsenring is a really tough track for the driver as well. And also to get the setup right, it's not easy. I think we were in FP1, like half a second behind. So we were like, oh, we got some work to do, guys, in just one more free practice. And yeah, that was quite a tough one. And then two Hockenheims. We normally struggle in Hockenheim. So yeah, the fact that US got to test there as well made it even more difficult, but also more rewarding when we managed to take the title home. And, you know, the fact that they really prioritized the German championship and we still managed to beat them was a nice feeling.
And I mean, really, it was only you and I think Nikita Bedrin, your teammate, who also took both titles in the rookie classification for Van Amersfoort, who ran full programs in both championships. Was that always the intention to do both?
Yeah, I don't think Josh was meant to do the whole thing. And then I think McQueen had some issues with getting into the country and stuff like that. And yeah, it was things kind of changed a bit at the end of the season for some of my teammates, which meant that they didn't do the last rounds.
But for you, was it always the intention to do both, or was it something you changed the view on?
Yes. Yeah, we started off just prioritizing the the Italian championship, but we ended up going to Germany first two rounds. I was leading the championship by quite some margin. So yeah, after that, that was I think a month break, something like that. At that point, we decided we may as well just finish it off. It's been strong so far, and you know, there's no clashes. We can still try and win both. But yeah, it made it quite difficult, as I said, because we didn't get to do a lot of the testing that, you know, US Racing managed to do a lot of testing in Germany, and Prema and the other teams managed to do a lot of testing in Italy. And because we were the only team doing both full time, it was really tough. But that was just because of the fact that the calendar was super condensed this year in the latter half of the season. I think the last 2 months was the majority of German F4 races, especially because Nürburgring was postponed earlier in the season, which could have, you know, changed a lot in the championship. But anyway, it made it quite difficult, but I'm happy to be sitting here having won both, because it would be a bit disappointing if not.
And so this year, or 2021, you moved from US Racing to Van Amersfoort. It seemed that you and the team just really clicked immediately. How did you find the transition, and you know, what did they bring to your game and to your driving?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, most of the praise has to go to my engineer at VAR. He did a mega job at just developing me as a driver. And obviously their package is just really nice. Like, you know, you walk into their factory and you can tell that they're a great team, and they're really, you know, the cars are always prepped nicely. The trucks always look amazing. You know, just the little details they're always staying on top of. You can tell they're a top team just from, you know, walking into the factory. But yeah, my engineer, he was, you know, in the F4 level, there's not really much between the cars. It's all really down to the driver. And yeah, we focused a lot on the driving side. We were always looking at the small details, and that meant I came a long way as a driver, just in what I could achieve in terms of like an outright qualifying lap. I think I could have got more out of the car at the end of this year than I could have at the end of last year if it was the same car. So yeah, just the stuff that we focused on was really cool. I really enjoyed working with the team, and it was a really nice atmosphere too. You know, really serious, but also not serious. You know, we had some time where we could enjoy it a bit and celebrate and have laughs. And I think that's also important to have a good atmosphere within the team.
Yeah, and I think that was clear just sort of wandering through the paddock, how well you'd sort of gelled with the team and with your engineers in VAR. I think overall, I mean, the paddock atmosphere was professional at all times, obviously, but also, you know, very sporting and friendly atmosphere in you know, both championships. Looking at your main rivals, obviously Tim Tramnitz was your closest rival in both, focusing a bit more on the German. I think if I ignore the reverse grid races in Germany, I worked out you won, I think, 26 out of 33 races between you. You had a couple of moments with Tim, one where you got a time penalty. But I guess, you know, the two of you were running at the front in both championships for much of the year. How do you see, you know, Tim Tramnitz as a rival and competitor this year?
Yeah, to be honest, he's been a really strong competitor for the last two seasons. Obviously, he was my teammate last year, and he was further ahead than I was last year. He was someone who I was trying to chase and get closer to last year. And then this year, partly moving teams, how I've developed as a driver meant that we were relatively level this year. And we've been fighting for the whole season, basically, especially at some tracks more than others. At Hockenheim, their team is quite strong, and also Sachsenring, he was pretty strong as well. So yeah, we had a few close points throughout the season. Obviously, we made contact at Hockenheim. Don't know which, because there was two Hockenheim events, but anyway, we made contact coming into turn eight, I think, the Mercedes Arena. And yeah, I'll hold my hands up to that, to be fair, and take the penalty. Looking back on it, now I've won the championship, I'm quite happy to take the penalty. But yeah, I think we also came together in Saxon Ring off the start and stuff like that. It was super close, but I think most of the time it was fair. It was quite common that he was like chopping me off at the starts, which I thought was a bit over the top. But apart from that, he's a fairly clean and clever driver. We were racing each other pretty hard but fair, so I thought it was quite a nice championship battle, more so in Germany.
Yeah, and I mean the Prima team obviously skipped Germany after the first couple of rounds. I think were you a little bit surprised that they weren't so competitive as they have been in previous years, with, you know, obviously particularly with Sebastian Montoya?
Yeah, I mean, I think Prima have got a really nice F4 car. Like their, you know, Mini showed last year that they have a really strong car. But yeah, they just maybe just didn't get everything together this season. They were strong at some tracks, like they won in Zandvoort, obviously, with Smal. And I think also in Paul Ricard with Smal. So yeah, they were strong in some points, but they were always really strong in qualifying. Like I think Montoya was on pole at Red Bull Ring, but never quite able to win the race. So that was kind of looked to me like his issue. Obviously, it's not really my talk on, but yeah, it was. They were quite strong this year, but not really our main competitor, which was somewhat surprising.
Yeah. Okay. Let's maybe. Now go back a few years to, you know, how you got started in motorsport. So obviously traditional route through karting, yep. And I guess some family history as well. Just tell us a little bit how you first got the bug of motorsport generally and your first years in karts.
Yeah, so I grew up always as a big fan of cars. Like I could normally tell you, like when I was like 6 or 7 years old, tell you every single car that drove by, which was, you know, it was kind of my thing. I had loads of model cars in my bedroom and stuff. So I was always a bit of a petrol head when I was young. And also partly because my dad was racing when I was young, just club level, but I went to some of the tracks to watch him when I was younger. So I was always, you know, around the car, sitting in the car and stuff, and just smelling the, you know, being there and smelling the fuel and stuff like that. And you know, you can't beat the smell of petrol, I don't think. But yeah, I was always there and you know, watching my dad race. My uncle actually raced in that same you know, with him, which was quite nice. And yeah, my mum took me to a kart track maybe that same year. I think I was 6 or even 5 maybe. And it was Bucknell Park, and yeah, I was just driving around and started to fall in love, and you know, going back every now and then. And then for Christmas I got a Bambino kart, I think, that year. And then from there my dad was taking me to Rye House every week on Wednesday afternoon and Saturday morning, I think, mostly in the freezing cold. So I'd be like, I remember we used to go there and I would do like, I don't know, 30 laps or so, and then shiver in the front of the car with my hands on the air vents, cooling, heating up again. But yeah, I was always like wanting to be in the go-kart. I just loved it at first. And then, you know, things progressed and I started racing at, I think, club level when I was 8 in cadet karting. Won a few races there and then I moved up to juniors in 2019, I think, focused mainly on the European Championships in Miami, which isn't quite the same level as the karting you see nowadays with people like you know, Lindblad and where Antonelli was this year, but still was, you know, quite competitive stuff, and I learned really my trade out there. And then yeah, 2020 was actually meant to be my last season in karts. I was meant to do the full season with in seniors, you know, doing the European Championship again, but in seniors, and also some British racing as well. But yeah, COVID happened, and yeah, I found myself sat in an F4 car in July or so.
I mean, as you said, I also understood that the intention hadn't been to step up in 2020 immediately to cars, and but then you did a couple of tests, right, and were pretty quick. I think fastest in Lausitzring, was that right?
I did, I think, 4 days with Mucca. I did two in Misano, and two in Imola. So that was a pretty cool experience for my first time in an F4 car, especially in Imola. Not so much the temperature. I think it was like 32 degrees for my first ever test, which was quite tough. But yeah, then I went to Lausitzring maybe a couple weeks later. I didn't know it at the time, but I just finished my last karting race. And then we came straight to Lausitzring and did the test there with US. And actually, to be fair, Lausitzring is quite a good track for US. And I managed to put a really fast lap time down in the preseason test. And yeah, from there, we just decided, okay, we may as well do the first round. It was pretty strong. And I stuck it on the front row for my first ever race. Didn't quite manage to do the start, but that's a different story. Yeah, and then it just escalated. We were like, you know, initially planning to do a couple races, then the plan was the whole season. And I wouldn't change a thing for it. I was quite happy to have had a whole year of experience because, you know, I wouldn't have liked to be starting this season having not done a real start, because, you know, stuff like that you can't replicate in testing.
I guess COVID helped you in that you were already 15 by the time the season finally got underway.
Yeah, I was quite lucky because obviously it was meant to start in April or May or something like that. I'm not sure what the original calendar said. So we were planning to do some guest rounds at the end of the season to keep, you know, the rookie status, but then COVID came along and changed our plans completely. So in a way it helped me out.
And why Germany? Why not UK? You know, you've been karting in the UK, so live in Britain. Why did you decide to go the German route for 20?
Yeah, to be honest, the plan was never ever to race in British F4. Just something about the tracks, you know, they're not really grade one tracks that we have out in Europe. And also the competition, at least in 2021 and 2020, it didn't look as strong as the German and the Italian counterparts. So, you know, in Germany, there was some Red Bull drivers and some Ferrari drivers in Italy as well. So it was logical to go out there and have a high chance of being seen by the big guys if I did a good performance. So that was really the reason. And also to get experience on tracks that I'm bound to be racing at in the future. Like, I don't think F1 is going to go to, you know, many of the tracks on the British F4 calendar very soon.
Yeah, well, that nicely takes us to looking to the future. And obviously one of those Red Bull Juniors racing in 2020 in the German series was testing for the same team in Valencia, yeah, in FIA Formula 3 recently. Mm-hmm. I guess that was your first experience of that car and running with Prämer in the 3-day test there. How was that first experience? How did the test go from your perspective?
From my perspective, it was a really positive test. Obviously, the first experience of the F3 car, also with arguably the best F3 team, at least in the last couple of years, you know, reigning drivers champions. It was really nice to jump in their car and show what I can do. And I was quite happy with the progression I made. Obviously, there's only 8 sets of tires that we had over 3 days, which is it's not that much, but still, I think I learned a lot, and it's definitely gonna stand me in good stead for next season.
The other three drivers running with Prämer over those days, obviously Jack Crawford, who I worked out is only 6 days older than you, in fact.
Yeah.
Arthur Leclerc and Paul Aron are quite experienced single-seater drivers. Did they pass on any good advice on the Formula 3 car?
I mean, we were quite, you know, we were quite, you know, competing against each other, to be honest. So we weren't really being too friendly, but anyway, we could look at each other's data, and I learned a thing or two from all of them, really. And it was nice to have, you know, 2 second year drivers as references, because, you know, the driving style per car always changes. You know, jumping into the F3, it's quite different to how you drive the F4 car. Now you've got some downforce and a bit more power. So yeah, I learned some things that I wouldn't have learned just driving around by myself, because I could look at some really, really good references. So that was really useful. And especially in the longer runs where you have to really save the tires, that was quite helpful.
And there've been some comments recently, particularly from Oliver Oakes of High Tech, for example, that the step up to Formula 3 for rookies is quite challenging. And obviously, you know, we've seen with Dennis Hauger in his first year, and then with Jack Crawford and Johnny Edgar last year, you know, particularly coming from Formula 4, it is quite a big step to the Formula 3 car. They are quite a bit faster and more power, Halo, DRS, as you've said. You know, it's only kind of 16 months, I think, since your first single-seater race. You know, if Formula 3 is the route, any concerns about making that step for 22?
Yeah, I think before the test, I had some doubts, like, you know, as you always do before driving a first car. It's, you know, things you just wonder, like, you know, what's different, where am I gonna potentially struggle. But after doing that test, it filled me with quite a lot of confidence that I was already, you know, relatively close, and there was only a few details to work on. So yeah, after doing the test, I was quite happy. But it's quite tough to look at, you know, rookie campaigns from people like Crawford and Edgar, because they're against, you know, that they're in cars that can't win the championship. It's just a fact that, unfortunately, last year, you know, only six cars could have won the championship. And yeah, it's quite tough to you know, look at their seasons and say, oh, that's because you came from F4, because I think, you know, a lot of drivers came from regional or Euro Formula or wherever and struggled just as much. So I don't think it's really related to, you know, the step from F4, because I think if you get your head around it fast enough, then it's no problem. There's nothing more you can really learn from driving the regional, in my view.
Yeah. And obviously, nothing has yet been confirmed for 2022 beyond that test that you did. But, you know, if Formula 3 is the preferred destination, and certainly, you know, that's where the ambition lies, what do you think would be realistic goals for a rookie season in Formula 3, you know, bearing in mind what we've just said? Would you look at it as a learning year, or is the competitor then, well, yeah, learning year is great, getting experience, but you know, let's fight for the title. So, you know, how assuming, or if that step comes to pass, you know, what would be your ambitions? What do you think are realistic goals?
Yeah, to be honest, first of all, I think it's, you know, quite difficult to make performance-based goals for the season. And I try not to, for the most part, especially because there's a lot of things you can't really control. For example, mechanical failures, there's nothing you can do about that, and that could change a lot, you know, your result. But I think if I just finish the season and look back at it and think there's not much more I could have had there, a bit like my F4 season this year, the odd mistake, you know, we're all human, but, you know, for the most part, it was a strong season. I think that's really the main thing. And to if I can continue with the trajectory of development that I've had this year, then I would also be relatively happy. Yeah, I think it also depends a lot on what team I drive for, because that can change the result. But yeah, to be honest, I think, like, it's difficult to say, but I don't really want to treat it as a learning year. I've had my learning year in F4 last year, and I can count this one as a learning year as well. And I think in F3 next year, I want to to, if I was to do F3 next year, I would want to really go for it and not have it as a learning year. Even if I do regional next year, I wouldn't have it as a learning year either. I think I'm past the point of having a learning year, and there's no real excuses.
Are there any areas of your, well, obviously we all in all walks of life have things to improve on, but where would you see any of your sort of development needs as a driver, or things to still to work on? Or is it just sort of more just experience?
I think especially in the F3 car in Valencia, it was more just doing more laps, just general experience, and some of the techniques just needed a bit of brushing up on, but I think that can also come with more laps. So it's in general, I think this season in F4, my performance under pressure was quite strong, which I was quite happy with. And the only negative I'd look at in the F4 season that I could definitely take into next year is kind of accepting defeat, because, you know, I was in a few situations where it would have been better just to hold position or let the guy overtake me and just finish behind him, rather than, you know, the contact with Tramnitz and Hockenheim. I could have quite easily finished second behind them and, you know, only lost 7 points or however many it is. So I think it's just that's probably the main thing that I would take away from my F4 season that I need to work on going into next season. And then obviously it's just the finer details about doing more laps in whichever car I do.
Yeah. Which brings us, I guess, to the next topic. Obviously you now have the Ferrari Driver Academy behind you, also, you know, supporting you in your personal development as a driver. I guess you were probably only two when Kimi Raikkonen won the last world championship in a Ferrari. So it's not something you remember. Were you a Ferrari fan as a kid?
I mean, if someone asked me to paint or draw a race car, then I would have painted it red, because, you know, it's the most iconic brand of Formula car and car in general, really. It's, you know, a brand with rich history, and it's really an honor to have their badge on my suit next year. I'm really looking forward to it. And yeah, to be honest, when I was younger, it was like I was kind of watching in 2013. That was kind of when I started watching F1. So I've just only really seen Mercedes and Red Bull dominance so far. But I'm hoping maybe the regulations next year could change that. But I wasn't necessarily a huge Ferrari fan when I was younger.
Was there interest from the junior academies of some of those other teams you just mentioned? Obviously Mercedes, Red Bull, Alpine. Did you have, or your management team, did you have discussions with them before the Ferrari thing happened?
I'm unsure. Obviously that's not really my area to comment on, but I'm sure my manager knows more about that. But anyway, the final decision was with Ferrari, and for whatever reason, I think it was the best decision that we made.
And how did those contacts come about, and when? Was it something, you know, in that dominant period in Formula 4 that we talked about earlier in mid-season? Or, you know, obviously these things don't happen overnight, so...
Yeah, to be honest, I'm sure it happened as a result. There was no contact before this season. It was, yeah, more just as a result of the strong performances, especially... in the first half of the season, really, I had quite a strong start, and I think that maybe grabbed some attention. But yeah, I'm not really sure when the contact came about, and it wasn't through me; it was through my manager. So
And we talked a little bit at Hockenheim about the World Scouting Finals. How did you enjoy that? And, you know, what were the most demanding and what were the most fun parts of being put through your paces in Italy?
Yeah, obviously they put us through fitness testing, first of all, which was it was a nice challenge. And also we were in the gym where the F1 drivers trained. So that was pretty cool. And then we did some simulator work with the with the engineers, which was really nice. And that was kind of where you could first show any type of driving, you know, skill. But then the day after we were on Fiorano. So that was when the pressure was on. I think driving out of the pits on the first lap, I was, I didn't know whether to be like so happy that I was driving on such an iconic track or so much pressure that, you know, I was the, in Fiorano, there's only one car on track at a time. So it's like, you know, all eyes are on you and you need to do a good job. But yeah, the whole thing was an awesome experience to spend time in the headquarters of Scuderia Ferrari and then also driving on Fiorano. It was a mega week.
And I asked Dino Beganovic at Monza whether anybody had beaten his reference time in the Formula 4 car. And he said that no. So I don't know whether you have any comment. You can say no comment if you want.
I don't know because we were all driving.
Times?
So they didn't really let on to anything. So yeah. I guess he was faster than me then if he says so.
Yeah, he also sort of smiled slightly sheepishly. So I guess it was pretty close either way. Any plans to move to Italy? Be close to Maranello?
That's that, you know, that they're keeping me updated, but it wouldn't be this year. It would be you know, I think a lot of the drivers there spending a lot of time out there. I'm not sure if it would be full time if I lived out there, but I would definitely spend a lot of time there in the factory and in the gym and stuff like that, just spending time with everyone. But yeah, I'm not really sure what the plans are for moving out there or not. I think we kind of have to see, first of all, you know, what happens next year before we make a decision on that.
And a bit of time over the winter, you started Italian lessons?
Yeah, I think I need to because it would be a good impression if I turned up to the first day knowing a few words. So yeah, I should get on top of that.
Yeah, good idea. I mean, you haven't had a lot of spare time really with motor racing, testing, awards, school. So you know, what do you do in your spare time if you have any?
Yeah, so I finished school now, and obviously the racing's finished, as you know. So, yeah, I took a week off just to relax and see family and friends that I hadn't seen for a very long time. So that was nice. And now I'm back in the stage where I'm training 3 or 4 times a week, just keeping on top of things over the winter. And then, yeah, I think when we get closer to the season, it will get a bit more intense. But yeah, at the moment I'm just relaxing and cooling down after what was a really hectic season.
I read somewhere you're a Leyton Orient fan. Is that correct?
I don't actually know where that came from. I think it came from my granddad, who is a Leyton Orient fan. So I think he lets on that I am. But to be honest, I don't have much interest in football. So I wouldn't say that I am, no.
Well, we'll pretend you are to keep your granddad happy. Yeah. Well, I mean, thanks very much. I mean, we talked, you know, when you were getting into motor racing about the involvement of your family, and it does seem that the sport runs in the Behrmann family genes. So yeah. Your father raced and still races, I believe, and also with the number 87.
Yeah. My dad, he hasn't raced for a while, but yeah, he did race with the number 87. It's because I was born on the 8th of May and my brother on the 7th of August. So that's how that came about. And yeah, that was my number on my first go-kart. And yeah, it's been the same ever since. I think next year I won't be able to race with that number. So that's unfortunate. But hopefully with sometime in the future, I can put it on again.
Still vacant in Formula One, so maybe it'll still stay that way in a few years' time. But I understand your brother and your cousin are also karting, so it's there'll be some family rivalry to see who's fastest.
Yeah, I'm sure in a few years' time when they're all grown up a bit. My my brother's racing in the UK karting, and my cousin, he's only young. he's basically at the stage where I was, you know, driving at some tracks in Kent, in a tiny little Bambino car. So yeah, I need to go over and support him a bit.
Yes, well, I mean, we could potentially see two more Behrmanns in Formula Four, and who knows after that. But anyway, I mean, thanks very much, Ollie, for your time and your thoughts today. It's much appreciated. As I said at the start, highly successful season in taking the double championship for the first time that anybody's done that, and it's on behalf of also Formula Scout and our readers and listeners, then let me wish you all the best for the winter break. Have a great Christmas and every success in the coming season. And I think I'm probably not alone in looking forward to seeing how you get on at the next step on the ladder.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers, Ollie. Thank you very much.
Thanks. See you soon.